Hello, I am Merwat. That is ometown.com. Oh, wait, hold on a second. There you go. And Ometown is powered by my news aggregation engine that reaches out into the ether and grabs a bunch of stuff, news, headlines, and a little bit of information so that I can pull together some news and we can talk about it here on the Ometown Daily News Show. That's this. All of this news gets aggregated into six main categories: create, news, education, entertainment, social, and technology, and a bunch of channels underneath it, all of which I hope to bring to Twitch. And if not Twitch, then YouTube, because Twitch only right now allows me to store 14 days worth of Ometown Daily News. I can imagine if I keep doing more shows, Twitch basically will just kick me to the curb really fast, and I won't have any articles or any streams stored. So I make it an archive over on YouTube, and the podcast exists as well. So go and check it out. At any rate, I'm going to get into the news. We got about 15 or so articles, and the first one is in the Word in Tech. Apple and Samsung smartwatches need more buttons if they want more athletes. I'm not quite sure why. I thought it was an interesting headline. So let's click the link and just go straight over to it. This is at The Verge and it's by Victoria Song. And it says, "There's a reason why button navigation is so beloved." So I'm really curious what it is. Earlier this week, Samsung announced the Galaxy Watch 5 Pro. It's Samsung's most durable smartwatch ever, and it unpacked, it was clear that the company intends the watch to appeal to outdoor athletes. Apple also revealed at WWC with that Watch OS 9 will feature a ton of new running metrics, added fuel to the rumors that a rugged Apple Watch may be on the way. I don't see that, but no, maybe I'm wrong. I just don't see anything. Maybe a bigger watch because there people want more real estate on the screen, but ruggedized, I think it does a bang up job right now. And there's always cases to cover it. So, ruggedizing it just adds price and not necessarily better functionality. But the article continues. It's clear that both companies are looking to lure in users from the Garmin and Polar crowd. But aside from the battery life and durability, there's another obstacle that could derail the efforts, and that's touch screens. And in a lot of cases, you are gloved, so you can't really touch the screen, and not all gloves have capacitive nature to it. So you can't activate anything, and that means buttons. But let's see if that's what the angle is on this. They've been testing the regular 40 millimeter Galaxy Watch, and while there's not the exact same, the Pro is essentially a bigger, hardier version of the Watch 5. And when it comes to the UI, they share the same DNA. So let's see. Challenging to swipe through screens mid-stride. And let's see what else. Have to stop and wipe their hands off just so that they can swipe left and right, tap the pause button, etc. Swimming, etc. They have the same issue when testing the Watch OS 9 on their Series 7. You have to swipe up or scroll via the digital crown to view all the new running metrics anytime. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, do people really monitor their metrics that much that they have to scroll through a quote unquote all of the new running metrics? Well, the runners that I know don't really look at their watch while they're running, other than to see perhaps what the time is. And then they estimate what their run time is. They're not trying to eke out a few more seconds. But maybe, some people are a little bit more into it, but I don't know if it's really to that level. So they say here, this is a non-issue when you use the Polar or Garmin sports watch. That's because physical buttons aren't thwarted by moisture or gloves. That's kind of what I was hinting at. Once you get used to them, you can flip through menus without having to look down until you absolutely need to. Not quite sure what they mean by that because you're going to have to look at your screen. So I don't know. I think this is a problem that's it's a solution looking for a problem, or I'm not sure. It doesn't seem like it's a really big problem, but I am not an avid runner, so perhaps I'll talk to some of my runner friends and see what their take is, and most of them have Apple Watches. So let's see, maybe it's an issue and maybe it's just an article. Let me post this in the chat so that you can go there and read more of it if you are so inclined. And the next article is over in the Word in Tech, and that is iRobot's poop avoiding Roomba J7 vacuum is on sale for $200 off. Great news, folks. Wellbots is currently taking up to $200 off cat Ubers or robot vacuums. Okay, that's because there was a picture of a cat sitting on the Roomba. Anyway, I'll click the link and let's just get to it. So I talk about this periodically. It's kind of funny that I do, because I don't really trust automatic vacuums because of the problem with, hitting an accident and carrying it around the house, which I've actually seen pictures of. And while that might be anecdotal, I should probably say, please, universe, don't make this actually a problem for me. But I've got 3 Savannahs and they haven't done anything outside of their cat boxes yet. But now that I said it out loud, I'm probably going to find a landmine somewhere at 2 o'clock in the morning when I'm going to get a glass of water. Anyway, Sheena Vasani is the author of this article over at The Verge. And it's about the Roomba having $200 off. What do you think of automated robotic vacuums? Do you want one in your house? Do you think that it's a benefit, or is it just another gadget? They still have to be cleaned out periodically, just like a regular vacuum. If you have hardwood floors, you're basically dusting all of the edges and then either wet mopping or dry mopping periodically. But I'm not sure, how often a robot vacuum would benefit me. I know that it would create more work the moment that it hits, some accident from your pet. And if you have a puppy, that's going to happen pretty often. So here it says, plus, it isn't likely to run over your pet's poop. And if it does, you'll get a new one for free within your first year of ownership. That doesn't save me the problem of having to trace where this thing has taking where it has taken the poo from my pets. I've said poo too many times in this stream, so I'm going to move on. The next article is something of a societal thing here in the United States. It doesn't really necessarily impact other places, but I think everybody has a vested interest in understanding socioeconomics, sociology, psychology, and each culture is a little bit different. But where do you really draw the line between donations to a political agenda and outright bribe? Cinema received over $500,000 from private equity before shielding the industry from tax hikes. So who is actually being represented here? And I think that politicians need to be kind of configured like NASCAR vehicles, and everybody should have badges on them scaled to the size of the investor in their existence. Remember the days when taking $500,000 from an industry and then passing legislation that only benefits that industry while passing the costs on to everyone else would be called corruption, asked one critic. Today, it's just lobbying as usual. Yeah, I agree. But this is not the first time where large sums of money are overtly donated to some cause. Obviously, this is a Common Dreams article. CommonDreams.org is the location. Kenny Stancil is the author. And I have to agree. When does it just become an outright bribe? Well, we just don't know. Apparently, the moral compass, the ethical compass, is truly questionable in today's democracy. Because it is almost all you, private citizens don't have enough money to be represented in our democracy, because we don't have the ability to eclipse what the corporate donation is, unless you're basically what amounts to an American oligarch, where you have the ability to pay large sums of money or essentially buy a senator just by being friends and giving bonuses, like, hey, go take this trip with me and all of this kind of stuff. It's making me desperate to find a solution for this. And talking about it is where I'm at. So where and when is this going to come to an end, where $500,000 from a private industry, and in this case, it says here, that it was a private equity firm that donated $500,000 in campaign contributions from private equity executives during the current election cycle. Yeah. Last week, Sinema agreed to back the Inflation Reduction Act as long as the so-called carried interest loophole, which benefits hedge fund managers and private equity moguls by allowing their investment income to be taxed at the long-term capital gains rate of around 20% rather than the ordinary top income rate of 37%, was preserved. So you basically kicked the can down the road. Democrats, who needed Sinema's support to pass the filibuster-proof bill through the evenly split Senate, obliged, foregoing a modest reform that would have raised an estimated $14 billion in federal revenue over a decade by increasing the holding period for investments to qualify for a preferential tax treatment from 3 to 5 years. And that's really what it comes down to. It's the immediate profit versus long-term positive gain for all of society. But I think that there's a lot of intent in hobbling the federal government so that corporations can, like locusts, reap their rewards in short-term, immediate, almost punitive to society gains, with rich people getting even richer and the middle class being pushed down further, from being able to influence society in any way, because everybody's going to be too busy in survival mode. It says the securities and investment sector as a whole has donated more than $2.2 million to Sinema since she was elected in 2017, according to Open Secrets. So really, a couple of ways to get rich: start a religion, become a politician in Senate, because the representatives, the House, you're going to get diminishing influence as population increases. But senators, chef's kiss if you get in there. Why? Because you gain influence as population increases. And apparently you can be a complete greedy numbnuts and still make bank. Let's move on to the next article. This is in the Aerith channel. The Dio Field Chronicle now has a free demo out. I just looked at it, but I didn't download it, and it's not my style of game, but I thought it was really interesting because there's a lot of people that are talking about it. The Dio Field Chronicle, it's a real-time strategy RPG that Square Enix revealed alongside Valkyrie Elysium, earlier this year, and now it has a demo out ahead of its September 22nd release. Let's click the link. There's a video over at this site, rpgfan.com, and Gio Castillo is the author of this article. But you can go over and watch the video of this over there at RPG Fan. But it says players across all platforms can now download a free demo of the Dio Field Chronicle. The demo sets the stage for the Dio Field Island, suddenly finds itself cast into an age of uncertainty due to the rise of warlike powers and modern magic. Players can experience the entirety of Chapter 1, which includes fast-paced, action-packed combat utilizing small squads consisting of various unit types with unique battlefield roles in a sprawling campaign. Begin your military campaign now and play the opening chapter of the game. Meet and strategize with the Blue Fox Mercenaries and experience a real-time tactical battle, a new, deeply strategic real-time battle system. Yep, it's over on Steam, by the way, so go check it out. It's also available for PlayStation Network, Xbox, Switch, eShop, and, yeah, like I said, Steam. So go check it out. The next article goes back to this societal thing that, you know, I always talk about things from three angles, which are, oh, no, this isn't going to let me post it because of one character. Ugh. Oh my goodness. I don't know what to do about this. So I can't post this into the YouTube chat. Anyway. So Trump basically bashed Obama for transferring records from the White House to Chicago. And here's why Obama was allowed while Trump is under scrutiny by the FBI. And if you haven't heard about it, Trump is basically being investigated for keeping records from the National Archives that are top secret or secret and other privileged information, and they're not his. And even his, like most things, his rants are completely off target and ill-informed and intellectually defunct, which 30 seconds of due diligence and thinking critically would advise anybody to not believe. But this is the new time that we are living in. At any rate, the story here is that he kept a bunch of records, at least 12 boxes worth. This article is over at businessinsider.com by Lauren Frias and Brent D. Griffiths. And I know a little bit about this because I've been talking to other people and reading other articles, and not just this one. I haven't actually read this one. But my understanding is that all of the information that, quote unquote, Obama took, he didn't keep, and it was actually being processed through Chicago National Archives and for Obama's library. Every president gets a library. You know, Trump's is going to be probably all marble and gold and filled with Dumber Dumber copies. But essentially, the process is that these records went through Chicago, shipped to a federal government facility where it was processed as president's records. And then it was manicured. It was processed. It was triaged. It was put together in such a way that it could be stored as the presidential record of Obama's existence as leader of the United States. Boom, done. He didn't store it in his house. It wasn't in private little boxes, and it wasn't in somebody's safe, and it wasn't shared with a bunch of other people. And it certainly wasn't nuclear secrets. So he's a little bit off base, and it's willful ignorance. And unfortunately, the people that need to hear it may come into this channel and then leave. And unfortunately, they leave before they think about what's actually happening in this, or they don't want to hear about Trump. But it is what it is. He's wrong yet again, and always is. And that's all that I'll say about that. The next article is over in the Hatch Ideas channel, and it is ultra rich fueling sales of luxury brands despite inflation and recession fears. And this is what I have been speaking about for the last 6 months or 8 months now since I've started doing this, which is the middle class is the one that's going to be, and lower, right? So there's lower class, middle class, upper class. There's strata within it. But unless you have $2.5 million, you're not in the upper class. And that's an estimate based on a bunch of people talking about what it means to be rich. If you are in the middle class, you're feeling inflation, you're feeling a recession, you're limiting how much gas you're buying and the food that you eat. You're making decisions based on your budget that is getting ever weaker, right? You don't have any bargaining power. You can't just offset it with, okay, well, I'm not going to spend an extra $1,000 on shoes each month or whatever. What you're doing is you're scrimping. You're trying to make things livable when the cost of living is exceeding your means without any, without you willfully going beyond your livable means. Well, the ultra rich are still buying and they're not feeling inflation and recession fears because their money is making money, you know, upwards of 12%. The return on invested money is somewhere between 8% and 12%. And more if you are riskier, if you are risk averse, then you're sitting around 6%. But typically it's at 8%. So your money is making enough money to keep you afloat if you invest it. Well, not everybody has the ability to invest enough money where their interest alone in their investment is offsetting inflation that's at 9%. Let alone when it's at 11%, and the cost of living is going up, where you have to decide, can I eat what I normally ate, or has the price gone beyond what I can afford? So experts say luxury brands are often insulated in economic slowdowns because most of their sales come from the super wealthy. LVMH, Ferrari, Capri are among the luxury companies reporting strong sales. Other companies, including Walmart and Gap, have slashed financial forecasts. Yeah, it's because people no longer can afford their healthcare costs, let alone their day-to-day. That's where they're spending their money. They're trying to keep themselves alive, and they can't go and buy luxury stuff. They can't buy superfluous stuff, things for fun and in it having a more enjoyable life. They are now trying to figure out how to get food on the table. Yet these mega corporations are still having record profits during the pandemic, post the pandemic, and into the future because the general population is getting priced out and we're getting a plutocracy in place. The unflagging strength in the luxury category is in line with past economic slowdowns, experts say, with the rich often being the last to feel the effects because of the cushion their extreme wealth provides. Among the jet set, the continued spending also signals how pricey purchases often serve as status symbols. Having symbols of power within your tribe is a powerful thing, said Milton Pedreza, founder and CEO of Luxury Institute, a market research and business management firm. Those symbols of power still matter tremendously within the tribes of the ultra wealthy. Very dystopian. You want to hear somebody just stand up and say, you know, I'll volunteer for my tribe. It's really dystopian. Very weird to hear a professional say something like that. Let's move on to the next article. That's in the Stock Marketeers channel, and it's in the New York Post, SoulCycle to hit brakes on nearly 25% of its location. And in the ironic statement, SoulCycle is slimming down. Let's go over to MarketWatch. The article is by Jennifer Gould. The closings are being blamed on the changing exercise habits following COVID lockdowns. So once hot exercise changed, some folks have been known to take multiple classes a day, is closing 20 of its 82 studio locations nationwide within the next few weeks. The company announced Friday in a town hall style Zoom meeting with its employees, yet again, people being told that their fired via Zoom, yet they're required to come into the office. The privately run company owned by Equinox Group will shutter four New York locations in Midtown Soho, West 92nd Street, and Park Slope, Brooklyn, along with Hampton's Outpost in Water Mill, sources said. The closings leave 13 locations in Manhattan. About 75 workers are slated for the chopping blocks out of a workforce of 1,350. However, the high-profile instructors like Stacy Griffith will remain, a source said, adding that part-time workers may also lose jobs or be moved over to other locations. Yeah, here's to being popular and surviving attrition, right, folks? What you have to do is basically look and be like that person, and you'll survive attrition. So let's move on to the next article. Soul Cycle is chopping souls. So over in the Warcrafters channel, five hidden gems you may have missed in 2022. This is over at PC Gamer. I'll just click the link so that we can get right to it. Christopher Livingston is the author of the article. It says, including a supernatural Western, a puzzle game that'll do your head in, plus a parody that's much more than it seems. Again, this is over at PC Gamer. I'm just going to say what they are. Not for broadcast. That was a fun watch over on Twitch. I watched a few people play it. It was interesting. Cardboard Kings, I didn't watch anywhere. I don't know much about it. Well, I don't know anything about it, but it says running a collectible card shop doesn't sound like it'd be super sexy, but oddly enough, the little store in Cardboard Kings is frequently visited by hotties as the new shop, as the shop's new owner, guided by an extremely helpful parrot, you buy cards online, put them out for sale in your shop, and try to turn a profit by buying low and selling high. If it's over on Steam, I'll probably take a look at it, only because I like more casual games. Kind of my chill. You know, I'm not really bombastic and screamy and all that kind of stuff, and jump scares don't really jump scare me. I'm never really surprised, other than by my paycheck. Patrick's Parabox, which I've never even heard of. It says there's no shortage of Sokoban box-pushing puzzle games, but Patrick's Parabox pushes its boxes inside other boxes and then pushes the boxes inside the boxes inside other boxes. Yeah, it's going to break your brain at some point, according to the author. Like when I accidentally pushed myself out of the box universe and wound up in a void outside time and space. Interesting. And Weird West, while the world was gripped tightly by the furled finger of Elden Ring, this immersive sim from the makers of Dishonored and Prey didn't get a chance to make a real stir. In the top-down stealth sandbox of Weird West, you're a bounty hunter coming out of a retirement to track down her missing husband, sneaking or shooting your way through ghost towns and abandoned mines. That Weird West was a fun watch as well, if you are into that kind of a thing, top-down game. I've never heard of The Lurker. Sorry, not Lurker. I am The Lurker in most channels. Anyway, The Looker. The author's first thought was that The Looker was simply created as a quick joke, a goofy parody of Jonathan Blow's puzzle game, The Witness, which is both a creative collection of puzzles and a little too full of itself. But The Looker is legitimately a great puzzle game in its own right, again, according to the author. If you want to go read more from Christopher Livingston, which I think has an epic author name, I hope that Christopher Livingston writes a spy novel. I think it would be amazing just to see that name on a book. It's awesome as it is, just seeing that name at pcgamer.com, but that is an author's name. And I'm speaking more about that person than I am about the article that was written. But anyway, they write a lot more, but five hidden gems you may have missed in 2022. Again, you can follow the link that's in the chat and show notes and visit the article by way of Hometown. So the next article is in the Stock Marketeers. It's in a section called Tax Watch over at Market Watch. And it says, yes, the IRS is hiring criminal investigators empowered to use deadly force. There was a lot of talk online about this. What the hell, IRS hiring people with ability to use deadly force. But here's some important context. So the IRS would be poised to get $80 billion over a decade if the Inflation Act passes. And the article was first published on the 11th, but then was edited again on the 13th. And that is why it popped up on my radar. It was pre the Inflation Reduction Act passing. So IRS poised to get $80 billion over a decade. And it says the Internal Revenue Service's operations are catching heat as the tax agency is in line for $80 billion budget boost under the Democrats' proposed spending plan. And now there's intense attention being focused on IRS workers who actually pack heat. It started as a criticism from Republican leaders that the tax collecting agency would bring on 87,000 new employees to target regular everyday Americans, with the $80 billion earmarked for the IRS in the Inflation Reduction Act reconciliation bill, which looks poised to become law. That's a misleading claim, according to the AP, Associated Press. The bill passed Friday in a 220-207 vote of the House of Representatives and is headed to President Joe Biden's desk to be signed into law. So there are 300 vacancies for that role, which pay between $50,000 and just shy of $90,000, according to the listing. Though the job listing drew new attention this week, requiring some IRS special agents to potentially use deadly force is nothing new, the IRS criminal investigation spokeswoman confirmed. I don't know why they said spokeswoman. Why not spokesperson? I mean, if we're in this new era of kind of not treating somebody based on their gender differently, why are we intoning spokeswoman versus just spokesperson? The job description is consistent with previous special agents announcements for the same position and consistent with announcements from other federal law enforcement agencies. They are law enforcement, so why don't you have the ability to use deadly force? If necessary, you become a federal agent. At the starting point, the estimate of the IRS's bringing on 87,000 new employees came in 2021 when the Treasury Department, the AP noted, it would be a multi-year hiring plan and would encompass extra auditors plus an array of other jobs amid retirement and other IRS attrition. Yeah, because we have an aging population, so we need replacement and onboarding and getting institutional awareness and attrition in general. People get burned out and they get tired of having to deal with some people, and you don't want angry, bitter people serving the public. You want people that are positively engaged, looking to be a solution and not just an antagonist. More than half of the $80 billion of supplemental funding in the Inflation Reduction Act would be earmarked for more tax compliance enforcement. Officials, including Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen and IRS Commissioner Charles Rettig, a Trump pick to lead the agency in 2018, have pledged that the extra enforcement would not be directed at small businesses or households making less than $400,000. That's a small household, huh? And a small business. So, and when you talk about federal contracting and stuff like that, there's a concept called small business set-asides. That actually changes depending on the agency. At any rate, this is just standard practice, and it's only convenient now, that people are all upset because the IRS is hiring somebody that has deadly force. Anyway, the article was written by Andrew Keschner over at Market Watch, and you can follow the link. As usual. The next article is Meta is injecting code into websites to track its users, according to researchers. Meta, the owner of Facebook and Instagram, which you might as well just call Meta Facebook because that's what it sprung from, has been rewriting websites its users visit, letting the company follow them across the web after they click links in its apps, according to new research from an ex-Google engineer. The two apps have been taking advantage of the fact that users who click on links are taken to web pages in an in-app browser controlled by Facebook or Instagram rather than sent to the user's web browser of choice, such as Firefox or Safari. This is all kinds of creepy. As someone who practices cybersecurity and promotes cybersecurity, using a proxy browser allows a man-in-the-middle attack, which this actually is. This is an article over at theguardian.com by Alex Hearn. Owner of Facebook and Instagram is using code to follow those who click links in its apps, according to an ex-Google engineer. Now, I don't want people to think that it's using code. It's not using code. It's using a custom browser in its own app to keep you from exiting the app and going to your external browser, the one that actually promotes privacy. So if it's preventing me from using Safari, Apple should be pissed, absolutely livid, because it's going to be breaking the integrity, the security of the Apple apparatus, the security apparatus in place. Even if it is compartmentalized within its own container, it's still violating the user's privacy because it is tracking everywhere they are going while they're in the app. And I'm glad that somebody is calling this BS out. If I click on a link, I should be able to use the browser of my choice, not the one that they have built into their program. That's just me, though. And that's coming from somebody who has developed programs that are similar to this, where people would use my custom browser to get free internet access. But everybody knew going into it that it was a free browser that allowed them to get free internet. So this is, you know, around the original .com days. So it says the two apps have been taking advantage of the fact that users who click on links are taken to web pages in an in-app browser. So that's not code per se. That's not something that's embedded on a website somewhere. It's actually staying within the app, but keeping you away from Safari native or Firefox native, but probably still giving you the perspective that you are still surfing the web, and you may think that you're in something other than your native. You may think that you're in your native browser because it doesn't inform you that you're not using your native. It says here at the bottom, as I'm scrolling through it and talking, you know, I see the company does not disclose to the user that it is rewriting web pages in this way. No such code is added to the in-app browser of WhatsApp, according to Krause's research. So Java, and so it does code injection as well as using an in-app browser. So it even adds code as well, which is just as bad or worse. Okay, so where it said in the title, it made it seem like it was just code being used, but that's not the case. It's using an in-app browser and a JavaScript injection. It is a man-in-the-middle attack. You know, I can do that with a poison portal. I can set up a fake website that asks for a user's username and password, and I can do this in a coffee shop and make it pretend to be the coffee shop's access point, and people will log in and start divulging their passwords. Why? Because nobody talks about it publicly, and nobody actually teaches people that they have to practice a thing that I call clicking with care. Click with care. You have to know what you're doing. If you don't know what you're doing, then you're going to be a victim to somebody that does know what they're doing, and they're using it for malicious intent. Well, it says here, the practice of adding extra code to a web page before it is displayed to a user is frequently classified as a type of malicious attack. Cybersecurity company Feroot, for instance describes it as an attack that allows the threat actor to manipulate the website or web application and collect sensitive information, such as personally identifiable information or payment information. It's just wrong. I think that it's unethical, but Facebook is far from an ethical compass to be followed. Again, I'll remind everybody, they did psychological research on people by manipulating their news feeds with either positive news or negative news, and people who received negative news constantly in their news feed responded negatively within Facebook, but they weren't tracked out in the real world. And who knows what these people did with their negativity? And the same goes for the positive people. All of this positive news, they acted positively, but we don't know what they did with that irrational exuberance out in the real world, because it wasn't the reality of the news in their sphere of influence, in their full scope of use. Facebook should not be trusted. End of discussion, but I'm willing to discuss it. If you think that they should be trusted, I'd like to know why. With the constant barrage of questionable ethical behavior, I'm really curious why anybody should or would trust Facebook. And really, the only point I see of it would be for financial gain as a business, because it has a vehicle to reach users who just don't know any better yet. Anyway, the next article is over in the Mobile Channel. I thought this one was really interesting because it has to do with an optical microscope that allows observers to check out electrons moving inside gold. A team led by DGIST Professor Seo De Ha has developed an experimental strategy to control and observe the chemical reaction of a single nanocatalyst using an optical microscope. And the work is expected to contribute to catalyst design based on accurate understanding of the photocatalytic reaction through an analysis method that helps understand the electron excitation phenomenon and transition path. So let's click this link. It'll take us over to phys.org. And again, it's the article is written by DGIST, which I won't be able to pronounce this with any real fluency. Anyway, it's an Institute of Science and Technology. And this technology is expected to provide an experiment strategy based on system chemistry, a new experiment strategy for precisely studying photocatalysts at the single particle level. Plasmonic metals at the nanometer level, such as gold, exhibit high light absorption rate in a wide area within the range of visible light. They are combined with semiconductor photocatalysts to act as a medium to increase light absorption. Excitation occurs in which electrons gain energy and move as a reaction to light absorption, and it appears through various paths depending on the size of the metal and the wavelength of the light. There are various hypotheses on the effect of this electron movement as a catalyst, and the research team was able to test the hypotheses and reveal how electrons transfer by developing a new microscope that is experimentally simpler and more sophisticated than the conventional method of observing chemical reactions. So they'd be able to see this apparently in real time. It is expected that it'll contribute to the sophisticated design of catalysts and will be applied as evaluation and control technology using nanoparticles in pharmaceuticals. Interesting. So maybe they'll be able to construct something using this methodology. Fascinating. I wish I knew more so that I can speak to it at a higher level, but I am not a chemist or a physicist. So I'll just tease you with that, and you can go over and read more. There is obviously always more to learn, and we'll revisit it as it reappears in the news. The next article is in the Four Wheel Tech channel, and it is the USPS here in the United States will buy a lot more electric next-gen delivery vans. It says on Wednesday, the USPS changed its mind and says it will now limit its NGDV purchase, pardon me, which is the next-generation delivery vehicles. So it's next-gen delivery vehicle purchase to 50,000 NGDVs, at least half of which will be battery electric vehicles. Additionally, it says it will purchase 34,500 commercial off-the-shelf vehicles, including many BEVs, as are commercially available and consistent with our delivery profile, according to the Federal Register. Oshkosh NGDV has been designed to be fitted with either an internal combustion engine or a battery electric powertrain. When the USPS first selected the NGDV, it said that only 10% of the order would be BEV. DeJoy pleaded poverty on behalf of the Postal Service, which he said could not afford to purchase more BEVs. Yeah, well, when you have to reacquire all kinds of equipment because you tore it all down and de-optimized the USPS. I don't know how this numbnuts is still in office. But it's a board and a quasi-government agency. It isn't pure government. And it's being treated like a private business instead of a lossy enterprise. It's not supposed to make money. It's supposed to break even. And with this 1-2 punch of requiring it to fully vest future retirement, as well as being hobbled by DeJoy's processes, which do nothing. He intentionally destroyed equipment, directed people to destroy equipment and throw it out. Why? I don't know. It was already a sunk cost. We should have kept it and used it to optimize the processes, but that's not what actually happened. Anyway, more vehicles are going to be coming, hopefully electric, short run. Obviously, we need hybrid ones to go out into further rural areas, but electric vehicles for smaller commutes, I think, would be great. Again, I think batteries are the biggest problem to this entire thing of EV adoption. Jonathan M. Gitlin is the author of this article over at Ars Technica, by the way. Let's see what else, if there's anything. Oh, pardon me. Wow. Wow, Marowat, what are you doing? Hot mess. Anyway, I don't know if there's anything really else to say here. It says here at the very bottom, however, there's bad news too, as the USPS will keep 50,000 inefficient LLVs in service, despite the significant operational risk, considerable maintenance costs, and the higher emissions of greenhouse gases and other air pollutants when compared to more modern vehicles. Yeah. Well, that's kind of what happens when you gut it financially. And that is a Bush era process, not a recent thing. At any rate, the last article for today is Ford secures battery supplies for 600,000 EVs a year from 2023. So next year. On Thursday, Ford Motor Company announced that it had secured 60 gigawatt hours of battery cells that will allow it to build 600,000 electric vehicles by late 2023, and it says that it has contracts for cells that will allow it to build 1.4 million EVs by 2026 and has sourced materials for 70% of the 2 million EVs it plans to build globally that year. The automaker says that its plan for 2023 will consist of 270,000 Mustang Mach-Es. I wish they would redesign that. For North America, Europe, China, 150,000 F-150 Lightnings for North America, and 150,000 E-Transit vans for North America and Europe. And it will launch an additional electric SUV in Europe, building 30,000 of those in 2023 before ramping up production significantly in 2024. So I guess there's a hell of a plan. This article is over at arstechnica.com, and we all know how plans work out, right? I had a bunch of plans. Wow. My brain just went sidetracked. Dunk. Anyway, Jonathan M. Gitlin, again, is the author of this. And it says it will also start using LiFePO4 cells in the Mustang Mach-E and F-150 Lightning. Let's see if there's anything else in here. Yeah, not really. I mean, there's more, there's always more context, but the nuts and bolts are what I said. They are ramping up for a switch to electric, which is admirable, but I still think, and I say it pretty much every time, maybe people are going to get burnt out by me saying it, we need to change the nature of these batteries. They're a consumable and very expensive to replace. You can blow out an engine day after day after day, and it's still cheaper than trying to replace a battery pack. And it doesn't matter if it's a V8, a V10, let alone, you know, even the, you know, supercar V3s. It's not expensive to replace an engine, but it's very expensive to replace a battery pack. I think that is the biggest problem, along with the fact that it takes forever to charge and we don't have the infrastructure for it. Not fast charging, not at the rate that combustion engines afford that convenience. I can go in, fill my tank up 5 minutes and go. A lot of people will say, well, you're helping the environment. Well, yeah, sort of. It's not like battery technology is without cost to the environment, let alone where we are getting the resources for this. You'll have to do some research, but it's not necessarily peaceful coexistence with the countries that we are buying or obtaining, I should say, the materials for batteries from. Anyway, I would love to have an electric vehicle. I'm more prone to hybrid than I am to pure electric, only because I never want to be stuck on the road somewhere because the temperature dropped while I was driving, or I just went 10 miles too far without having a supercharger nearby. And even the supercharger is 30 minutes to 2 hours worth of waiting if they're not already full in high traffic places. They're always full. Okay, well, that's enough of my soapboxing for today. I am done with all of the articles. Made it under the wire of an hour, and I hope you find some of these articles interesting and that it teases you into going over to Ohmtown and finding more articles. I'm always linking every article to their source, and during the streams, I always give credit where credit is due. Thank you to all of those who are writing these articles. I find so many different areas of interest fascinating to me that I built Ohmtown for that reason, so that I can consume mass amounts of information in some modicum of order, and not just the pure chaos that information overload pretty much causes. At any rate, I want to thank anybody who is in chat, and if you are downloading the podcast, it's awesome. I put up another episode earlier today. Go and download it. Just do a search for Ohmtown. You'll find it. And don't forget, I'm over on YouTube. I'm here on Twitch as well. Like, follow, subscribe, all of that kind of stuff. And thanks for hanging out for the hour. Take care. Bye-bye.